All right, the second case study we're going to tackle today involves a situation of falsification rather than fabrication. Now, when I first heard these two terms, the first thing I said is, well, what's the difference between falsification and fabrication? And maybe the second case study that we're going to tackle this morning will help explain that. And to lead us in a discussion of this topic of falsification, we have with us Dr. Heather Durham, who is Associate Dean of Graduate and Postdoctoral Studies and a professor in the Department of Neurology Neurosurgery. She's had a long-term interest in developing graduate studies at McGill, serving as associate chair and chair of the graduate program of a large interdepartmental and multidisciplinary program in neuroscience. So thank you, Heather, for being with us. And I understand you're going to be taking us through the slides because when we get the case on, you'll see that it's quite dense. So this one will read out to you, correct?
Yeah. Yes. When I have and I'll also say that although it's an example that is from sort of biochemistry, from medical and biological sciences, for those of you who are coming from humanities, don't worry about the details of this. I'm going to explain enough of it so that you can understand. And basically, it's going to be pattern recognition. So don't be afraid of this long, haranguing case, because we wanted to set the tone of the situation in which this young professor finds himself. So Jim is an assistant professor at a well-known research institute. He feels... and he feels very lucky to have obtained this faculty position because, of course, we know it's very competitive these days. And he's now getting ready to submit his first manuscript for publication since he has joined the faculty. Now, this has taken a little bit longer because, you know, he was promised he'd have this lab when he got there, and it has taken a long time for the CFI to come through. And, you know, now it took 2 years to get the lab renovations done. And I see my colleagues laughing because this is what happens. This is what you can expect. But that doesn't reduce the expectations on this person, because he has his first performance review coming up with the chair, and he's got his sights on getting tenure, you know, a few years down the road. And if his performance isn't satisfactory, it's, at this point even, it's not going to look good for him. So that's why he's feeling this strong pressure. He needs to establish his unique research profile. So Jim studies this protein, and he's previously studied it in liver, but now he wants to study it in brain. And in science, we have a way of taking a tissue, grinding it up, and then separating out all the proteins according to their size on this gel. It's kind of like a sieve that you use in the kitchen. The small stuff goes through easier than the big stuff. And that's exactly what it is. So the bigger stuff's on the top, so the top band, and the lower band is a little bit smaller. So then we have a way of finding in that gamish and on that gel a particular protein we're looking for. We take an antibody against it. It sticks only to the protein we want to see. We develop it, and we can see the protein. So the adiciladalton band was the protein he saw before in liver. Now, he also has done this with brain tissue and done it, and he sees the same protein at adiciladalton that he saw in liver, but there's this other guy up there. Mm-hmm. At 100. So he thinks, this could be really important because this could be something very unique to the brain, a different, you know, form from the same gene or an isoform. And I want to discover it. I want to, you know, take this and discuss it more. But if I publish that now, people will see it and they'll just do it. The big groups will do it ahead of me. So he has this dilemma. He's got to publish, but he really doesn't want to show the band. So he thinks, well, maybe I could just not show it, but just say there's another band somewhere. Okay, so where are we with this one now? Okay. Okay, have I covered everything on there?
I think the dilemma. Here.
Yeah. Okay, so now we come to his dilemma. He says, well, what if I just don't show it? And how can I not show it? Well, the first thing is, well, because when we, these are kind of imaging things, so it's like taking a photograph, you know, if you take a low exposure, you don't see as much as if you see a longer exposure. So he says, well, if I just show a lower exposure, the upper band's lighter, so it won't show up. So I'll just show that, and I'll say there's another band somewhere. Or I could just cut out the one that I want to show and just show that one. just crop the other one off. Or I could put the whole thing, show the whole gel, but I could put it in Photoshop and use one of these nice little tools to just kind of, it's gone away now. I'll just blur it away. So then that's where we are, I think, for our questions. So we're going to have some clicker questions to for you to say what you think about the overall strategy that he has, but whether he needs to really show everything that he saw, and whether any one of those ways is an appropriate thing to avoid being in breach of academic integrity, and whether any one is worse than another.
Remember, so now we take out our little clickers, we go back to our favorite talk show, game show, and we're going to vote. So really, just a gut feel. Is it showing the underexposed blot that constitutes scientific misconduct? Or only cropping the blot, or blurring it, all of the above, none of the above. Should have had the music. All right, everybody had a chance to vote? Are we good? Or? Okay, so most of you thought that all of the possibilities of omission were scientific misconduct. But I guess reading this, and I'm not a statistician, but reading this, if I had to say which of the three, most of you who thought it was isolated to one of the three thought it was only the third one, blurring it out. So underexposing was maybe not as bad. Cropping was not as bad. When we're actually blurring it, then we're, I guess, we're moving along the line from omission to commission. All right. So let's go to the second question, because we're actually going to ask you to re-vote and come back after we've had time to think about it. We wanted the first vote to almost be a gut feel, you know, knee-jerk reaction. So here's the real question, right? Having observed that whatever band in law, and suspecting that it might be significant and something on which he'd like to do further research, is he obliged to show it? I mean, he did discover this. Do you want to add anything to the second question before they vote? So this isn't if what he did or how he did it constitutes scientific misconduct, but just it's sort of the flip side of the coin. He found it. So what is his obligation to show it? Does he have an obligation? Do you have an obligation to show all your findings? Or can you pick and choose the findings that you want? I mean, after all, I do research all the time in law, and I look at a lot of cases, and I go, nah, not relevant to what I'm talking about. I'm not going to show that case. Do I actually have to show it? It's a difference in, different in science. So maybe take a minute to vote yes or no. And for those of you who are undecided, we've given you a not sure, maybe. I thought that wasn't a good question, but I got overruled on the committee. So go, vote. They're done. Oh. Oh. No, still going. Okay. Unless they're all number three. Okay. Oh, this is turning out to be interesting. Good. So just because he observed something in his findings doesn't necessarily mean he has to show it, right? Not everything we discover in our research necessarily has to be part of the publication. So that seems to be the general predominant answer. All right. Maybe I've got to get you back to your mic because you don't have a walking one like me.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So maybe you want to just discuss this a little bit, and then we'll come back to the major questions.
So let's look at those of you who chose Number two, right? No, you don't have to show everything that you see. What are your exclusion criteria? So what possibilities were there for this, for excluding that second band? Or if you have, you know, I'll tell you, those of you who aren't in science, the longer you expose something, the more nonspecific crap you're going to see. So that's to say, okay, if you expose it forever and then all of a sudden everything starts coming out, we can exclude that. Because it's just, we know it's nonspecific. But what about something that's very distinct like that?
Table 15, Mike is on its way.
But I think that's the thing, is that he was looking for the protein in the brain, okay, and he found it. So that is his finding. This collateral, this other protein at 100 kilodaltons, I think it almost... he should know what that is. If that is the junk from the overexposure, then that's one thing. But I would also find it unwise to publish that band without being able to see or say what exactly it is. It's of, it's not as valuable as a mystery band in this publication either. So I'm not necessarily saying that, well, he should completely remove it and just... and just show the 80 kilodalton band, but he should also, before publishing, investigate what this band is at 100 kilodalton. It shouldn't be taken out, but it should also not be left in just as a mystery band for the sake of publication.
Okay, so having found this, he was looking for this protein in the brain. Well, he found it, but he found another form, he thinks. So... then it's, you know, he just should not publish. Okay, that's an interesting point of view. Does anybody have another point of view?
Table 19.
I think, although it's his discovery, I think he has a responsibility towards the people that funded his research, because usually in the biomedical field, we are claiming that our projects will help identify certain mechanisms that will unreveal, like for diabetes or autoimmune diseases or whatever. So in an ideal world, he should not delay showing some interesting data, because that would advance discovery in that field. So from that point of view, I think it's wrong.
Anybody other comments? What's he going to say to his chair if he says, well, I can't publish right now because I've got this? Is there a positive way he could put that? How's he going to solve his basic problem, which is pleasing his chair at this point and keeping his job?
We've got table six, and a mic is on its way. Thanks, David.
Sorry I keep putting up my hand, but I like the sound of my own voice.
It's a nice voice.
I come down on the side of him not cropping that out or anything. I think that's incredibly dishonest. But I do think that he shouldn't publish without knowing what it is. Like, is it artifactual? Is it actually a new form of the protein? Like, he really just putting in publishing it with, oh, here's the protein at 80 kilodaltons, and here's a band at, you know, 100 kilodaltons. I don't really know what it is. Seems kind of shoddy, actually. And so I agree that he should delay publication, because on the other hand, he doesn't want to get scooped. It like, it is a career. Like, you have to advance your career. So it seems like a compromise to hold off. The problem is, like, talking to his faculty. But I think if he sits down, it's like, I have this potentially really interesting finding. I know I've had some delays getting my lab set up, but I think that this could lead on a really interesting, like, avenue of research. Just give me, like, a couple months, or I'm not a biochemist, so I'm not sure how long that would take to possibly identify it, but give me a bit of time to do some crystallography or something. And
I think
I'm making stuff up.
And just take it to the mass spec people.
and figure out what this band is.
I think you're raising a really important issue, because this person can find himself between a rock and a hard place, so to speak, right? On the one hand, you've got to get out and publish. So these are the institutional pressures under which we're all working. And maybe it's the institutional structure that is the real culprit here, but that's the reality in which we all exist. So on the other hand, do you kind of take the risks of of not publishing, or if you do, and you are totally honest, then you see other people take that grain of an idea and run with it, and then you've lost out. So you've really hit the nail on the head. It's this poor person is actually caught. Even if there's no intention to be dishonest here, this person's really caught between those two.
There's another aspect, going back to the first question, and is he deluding himself that he's going to be able to get away with any of this? What happens if he submits this, showing a band that isn't identified? What's going to happen during the review process? Is it going to get turned down anyway, or is it going to get accepted? What kind of journal is he going to be able to get that accepted in versus if he actually finds something really significant? Okay, what's in brain too? Oh, okay. whereas, exciting new isoform in brain that may have significance to whatever, is that going to be a better journal? So aside from the integrity issue, there's the business issue of, what's going to be, it's short-term pain for long-term gain.
All right, so you've had a chance to hear some discussion. You've had a chance to think about it. Let's go back to our original questions. Take out your clickers, and we're going to have a re-vote. You are allowed to change your mind. Has this discussion changed your perception, changed your mind? If you could vote, we're going to do an interesting comparison between your gut feel vote and now your more reasoned vote. You tell me when you've all voted. Are we ready to stop? Has everybody had a chance to re-vote? Okay. Now this I got to see, the two side by side. Okay. So, there has been a slight change. Don't think there's much of a change in the first or the second. It's gone from 1% to 5 and 1% to 2. But there's been a 10% jump in your decision that the real nastiness here is blurring it out, right? We've kind of isolated which of the three is the real misconduct. And now we have significantly less of you, well, not significantly, but certainly 8% less of you thinking that all of them are wrong. So more nuanced numbers, and more of you think none of them are wrong. So if anything... fewer think none. Right. Fewer think none. So in other words, the discussion has caused you to move in the direction of that this... it seems to isolate one of the types of so-called falsification. Any concluding...
Yes, I would say that just about half of you will be in trouble if you ever come to my office as in my capacity as disciplinary officer. Because what is key to this particular case is the intent. It's not a case of an individual sitting there with a blot with, some dirty bands and dust stuff and saying, well, this is basically nonspecific. I can't see any relevance to this at all. This is a case of somebody saying, I think this is highly significant and I'm going to hide it for my own benefit. So in reality, I don't see, when I really think about it, even though it seems worse to really blur it out, and I tell you, when I had to do this to create this case, it scared the hell out of me how easy that was. It's the fact that you're trying to deceive people that is...
The key.
Do you have a comment?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We need to get you a mic. Yeah. Right behind you.
Yeah. I see our integrity officer wanting to really weigh in on this because for obvious reasons.
Okay. When I have this many graduate students in the room, I have to get on my bully pulpit here. Mm-hmm. As an example, journals are catching on to image manipulation. Mm-hmm. They now have forensic processes whereby they check images that come into their journals to see whether they've been manipulated. Mm-hmm. The Journal of Cell Biology has a nice description of what's acceptable and what's not. So I'm going to just read you two sentences. Mm-hmm. No specific feature within an image may be enhanced, obscured, moved, removed, or introduced. And there's an adjustments of brightness, contrast, or color balance are acceptable if they are applied to the whole image and as long as they do not obscure, eliminate, or misrepresent any information present in the original, including the backgrounds. So you can't manipulate the image to make the background completely disappear. That way people can't even tell how big the gel was. Mm-hmm. So that's underexposed, mm-hmm. but it's improper image manipulation. So people didn't think that underexposing was so bad. It is. That is, image manipulation is unacceptable, and a journal would catch you for it. Let me say one other quick thing, just for your own protection. Since so many things in the biological sciences are now digital images, please, please, when you take an image, keep the original. Store that somewhere. Don't even change the contrast on it, because the journal can come back to you and say, very nice picture you sent us, show me the original. And they will look at that original and see whether you have in any way manipulated it. So keep your originals absolutely pristine and clean. And if you make a copy, then you can try some appropriate manipulation, because some of it is okay.
Great. We really have to move on. Can I ask you for a 30-second bite? One sec, we have to give you the mic.
Yeah, 30 seconds. I think it's really important, though, that we raise the question of alternatives to this. Like, what do you do if you can't do this? Because you're right, it is a career. And you have to, you know, you've expended your resources to get a finding which you're going to have to publish, and getting more resources depends on publishing it, basically. So what do you do if you don't want to give away your scoop because it is a career, and you can't publish if you don't want to give away your scoop, but you have to publish if you're going to be honest? So what are the alternatives? You know, that there are strong pressures, and we have to acknowledge that. You know, one possibility is, well, find someone who has the resources and go to them and say, look, I have this really interesting finding, and make a deal or something. I don't, you know, it's happened to me when I was starting out with something similar to this. So, but we really have to think, not only, we can't just tell you, yeah, it's wrong, don't do it, because it does have implications for the future. So what do you do instead? I think that should be the next part of the discussion after this event.
And I should say that we will have time for a general discussion at the end of the morning. And at that time, you'll be free to raise any questions or comments you have about anything that happened during the day. But I'm going to be a taskmaster and say thank you so much and for this, and thank you for all your comments. Right. And the situations are getting grayer and grayer, as you've noticed. We started you off easy, we're getting harder and harder. And